Welcome, everyone, to Wife Talk. This is Mariposa's monthly leadership forum. Today, we are excited to have Duncan Wardle. Duncan is the former Vice President of Innovation and Creativity at the Walt Disney Company. Duncan and his team helped Imagineering, Lucasfilm, Marvel, Pixar, and Disney Parks to innovate, creating magical new storylines and experiences for consumers around the world. Today, Duncan is a leading global innovation and creativity consultant, training companies across the globe on how to leverage the full creative potential of their teams. He is also an innovation consultant at Ideate and Innovate. Through his company, Ideate, Duncan has trained over 30,000 professionals and executives across the world at organizations such as Apple, NBA, Twitter, Ford, Johnson & Johnson, Coca-Cola, Forbes, and many more. Wardle has been recognized by the White House with the Outstanding American Citizen Award in 2008 and has been awarded the Duke Edinburgh Gold Award presented by Her Majesty the Queen herself. That must have been exciting. He is a graduate of Edinburgh University, and in 2014, he was awarded an honorary doctorate from Edinburgh University. Thanks so much for being with us, Duncan. I appreciate you being here with
us. Thank you very much. Thank you.
Yeah. So I want to just let everyone know that Duncan's Twitter is at Duncan J. Wardle, and that's W-A-R-D-L-E, and his website is duncanwardle.com. So I gave everyone Duncan's bio, but I always start out Wise Talk with this question. And by the way, this is, I think, our 15th year, and we've been doing this every month. So I start out with the same question every time, which is, tell us a little bit about your journey and how you began your career at Walt Disney, how that all kind of came together. That would be awesome.
Well,
tell us the story.
Journey started in 1962. James Bond was born in 1962. The Beatles were born in 1962. And I was born in 1962. So born in London. I went to Hogwarts. If you look it up, it's called Rannoch School, R-A-N-N-O-C-H. It is a castle in the middle of the Highlands of Scotland, in the middle of the mountains and lakes. It looks just like Hogwarts. It had four houses, just like Hogwarts. I did not get a pair of trousers till I was the age of 18, because kilt was the school uniform. Went to Edinburgh University, and I was looking on the notice board to see if I'd been chosen for the rugby team for the weekend, and there was a picture of Mickey Mouse. I thought, what the hell is he doing here? And it was the chance to go along and interview for the International College Program and a chance to represent the United Kingdom Pavilion at Epcot. And so I went along, and I saw the presentation. I thought, yeah, I could do this. So I went along for the interview afterwards, and it was one of those dark rooms, and the interviewer was behind the table. Don't forget, this is like the middle of the 80s. And we've become great friends since. Her name's Becky. But she was seated behind the table, and it was one of those skirted tables. And when the interview finished, she stood up to shake my hand. And Becky's from Texas, and she's 6'5". And don't forget, this is the first American person I'd ever met in my life. And all I could think was, oh, my God, they can't all be this tall. And so I bought a ticket. It was $124 at the time to fly to a place called Orlando, which, as far as I was concerned, was in Miami, right, because everything's in Miami. And so halfway across the Atlantic, the pilot comes on the intercom. He says, ladies and gentlemen, I regret to inform you that Air 2000 has gone into liquidation bankruptcy as of midnight tonight at Greenwich Mean Time, which means we can no longer afford the landing fees at Orlando International Airport. We will be landing in Baltimore. So I thought, okay, all right, how far can that be, right? It's probably just part of Miami. So we land. We land. It's September, and I get out of the plane. I thought, Florida's colder than I thought it would be at this time of year. But, you know, whatever. So I jump in the taxi. I read out my address. He goes, Orlando, Florida? I was like, yeah. He goes, do you know where you are, son? I was like, yeah, I'm in Baltimore. He goes, do you know where Baltimore is? I was like, no, I have not. He goes, well, it's going to be more than a taxi journey, son. So that was my welcome to America present. I worked on the college program for a year. Went back to London. Called the Disney office. By the way, a great tip for you, persistence. Right? Persistence. If you have a dream, don't let anybody get in the way. Just bloody go for it. I phoned the Walt Disney Company, this one lady, every day for 27 days till she got so fed up of taking my phone call. She was polite enough to take it each day. She gave me a half-hour interview with the boss, and I became the cappuccino boy. That's where I started. I was the cappuccino boy extraordinaire. I folded 50 press kits a day. And my very first gig, 3 weeks into the job, I was told, you will be the character coordinator at tonight's Royal Premiere of Who Framed Roger Rabbit. I was like, all right, sure, I could do that. How can you possibly screw that up, right? So here I am standing at the bottom of the stairs at the Odeon Leicester Square. In comes the Princess of Wales, Princess Diana. Roger Rabbit comes down the stairs. Now, at this point, is when I learned in life that you have a contingency plan. Why did I learn that? Because I didn't have one. Now, a contingency plan would tell you that the average step on a stair, the width of that stair is about the length of your foot, unless, you know, unless you're a 6 foot rabbit with very large feet. And then, so with about six steps to go, with six steps to go, Roger trips over his own feet, and he now goes hurtling straight through the air towards the head of the Prince of Wales. Whereupon two royal protection officers with guns drawn took him out in midair, and there's this photograph that went around the world, you can still Google it. There's Roger on the floor with two Secret Service heavies with guns drawn pointed at Roger's head and me in the background in a total state of complete panic. And that was my first gig. So I thought, okay, I'm fired, no point going into the office tomorrow. So I didn't, and I got a call from my boss. He said, where are you? I said, I'm at home. He said, what are you doing at home? I said, well, I figured I was fired. He goes, no. This is exactly the sort of publicity that Roger needs. And I thought, oh, wow, I can make a career out of this. And so, for the first 20 years, I did. I did all the mad, crazy, ridiculous big stunts at Disney. I did a couple of Super Bowl halftime shows. I turned the castle into a cake. I sent my son's Buzz Lightyear into space on a space shuttle. He lived on the International Space Station for 18 months. He's the longest serving astronaut in space. He's now in the Air and Space Museum in Washington, D.C. Built a giant Olympic-sized swimming pool for Michael Phelps to swim down, Main Street, USA. Wow. And the last project I worked on was actually designing and helping the Imagineers design Galaxy's Edge, which obviously opens at Disneyland and Walt Disney World this summer, the Star Wars land, and even came up for the recipe for Buffer Juice, which is going to be the new drink served at Galaxy's Edge. So that's kind of exciting. So still dabble a bit with Disney here and there and Pixar and the guys, but about a year and a half ago, I got my 30th anniversary statue. It's the Jiminy Cricket bronze thank you for 30 magical years of service, and I kind of looked at it and thought, shit, I'm going to be dead soon. And then I got my life insurance policy the same week, which basically said, yeah, white, male, 54 years of age, 165 pounds, 74, you're out. I thought, wow, okay, great. So that was a bit of a seminal moment. I thought, gosh, and here's the gap, and this is why I decided to step out. Everybody wants innovation. Everybody now needs innovation. Mm-hmm. And so they can follow four models. Go hire a big innovation consultant. I used to do it. You spend lots of money. But they're not going to show you how they do what they do, or you wouldn't hire them back again. So then you can create an innovation team, which can create a catalyst. But it also sends the message to the rest of the organization, hey, you don't have to innovate. You're off the hook because we've got an innovation team now. So then you think, okay, I could create an accelerator model, and that worked at getting products and services quicker to market. But here's where we had failed. We hadn't embedded a culture of innovation into everybody's DNA.
Right.
And this is the gap in the market. All the CEOs are standing up there saying, we need you to be brave. We need you to take risks. And all the employees are sitting there going, that's great. I'll take a risk. I'll be brave. How about you show me how? And nobody has shown people how. So I thought, God, all I'm going to do is take the best of what IDEO does, what Disney does, what Pixar does, what other big, and I'm going to demystify design thinking. I'm going to create a toolkit that makes innovation easy, creativity tangible, and the process fun. And companies, oh no, it can't be fun. It won't drive business results. You can't change a culture unless Fred and Sally, who've worked for you for 1 year or 20 years, want to use the toolkit when you're not around. So you better make it easy, tangible, and fun. And that's all I've done. And now I travel the world. I'm doing workshops for Apple all over the place. I'm going out to Mumbai to do some work with Amazon Prime on creating new scripts for Bollywood. That'll be interesting.
New scripts for what?
Bollywood, darling. Bollywood. You know, I'm the world's leading expert on Bollywood. It's just about helping give people tools they can use tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock to help them think differently and help them innovate. And so I love it. So, for example, I'm going to ask, there's a series of creative behaviors, and there's a series of tools. I'll take you through a couple. I'm going to ask you a question. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes. And this is a word association game. I don't want you to think about the response. I just want you to give it. Where are you usually, and what are you doing when you get your best idea?
I'm usually right here where I'm sitting right now.
So you're going to hear people say the shower, the garden, walking the dog, commuting, falling asleep, waking up, drinking coffee, commuting. You'll hear all sorts of things, but you'll never hear the words at work. And so why don't we get our best ideas at work? So picture that last verbal argument you were in. And the moment that verbal argument's over, you're angry at Fred. Fred, I'll never work with you again. You blind-copied my boss. I hate you. You storm out of the office. You're angry. You're frustrated at Fred. You walk over to your local Starbucks, get a coffee, you sit down, you're beginning to relax. 5 minutes after the argument, it just pops into your head. The killer one-liner, that perfect one-liner you wished you'd used during the argument, that absolutely would have nailed the argument. Have you ever delivered the killer one-liner during the argument? No. It always comes to you 5 minutes after the argument. You could write volumes and volumes and volumes of the killer perfect one-liners that you wish you'd never delivered. Here's why. Your brain in an argument is very busy defending itself. Your brain in the office is very busy. It's doing emails, it's doing schedules, it's doing presentations. And we hear ourselves say, I don't have time to think. The biggest single barrier to innovation. And when I don't have time to think, I can't come up with that killer one-liner and I can't come up with that big idea. But the second I walk away from the argument and give my brain time to relax or step into the shower, bing, there's the big idea. Why? Because 87% of your brain is subconscious, only 13% is conscious. So you're using 13% of your brain most of the day. And so when that door between your conscious and subconscious brain is firmly closed, I call it busy beta, you can't access 87% of your brain. Every life, every one of life's experiences you've ever had, every place you've ever visited, every person you've ever kissed, even the ones you choose to forget that pop up on Facebook 5 years later and freak you out because they want to be your friend. All this material is back there, but you can't access it when the door between your conscious and subconscious brain is firmly closed. It's called the reticular activating system. I call it a door because it's easy to remember. So how do you get out of that brain state metaphorically and into the shower without actually having to go step into a shower? I run energizers. They're just fun exercises. I do them at the beginning of every ideation session, at the beginning of when we come back from break, because people have stepped straight back into their conscious brain again. And I'll just run a fun exercise for 2 or 3 minutes. All I'm listening for is laughter. The moment I've got laughter, I know I've opened the door wide enough between your conscious and subconscious brain to allow you to have big ideas but still make informed decisions. For the people who say falling asleep or waking up, there's a wonderful expression called when the penny drops. It comes from Thomas Edison. He used to fall asleep at night in an armchair with a penny between his knees and a tin tray on the floor. And as he would fall asleep, his muscles would relax, the penny would drop, it would wake him up, and he would write down whatever he was thinking. And people who get their best ideas when you're falling asleep or waking up, you can think, oh, Duncan's nuts. Why would I do that? Well, guess who had more invented patents in the 20th century than anybody else? Thomas Edison. So if you are one of those people who gets your best ideas as you're drifting off to sleep or waking up, just keep a notepad by the bed. But if you're looking for energizers, you can just go to duncanwardle.com/ignite. And there's a bunch of exercises there, energizers, that you can use when you need them. I'm not expecting people to be playful every minute of every day, but it does help if they are playful when you're trying to have big ideas, and the energizers get you there.
That sounds great. Let's talk a little bit about it. I'm going to reel it back a little bit here and talk about brain science here a second. So you talked about the 87% and 13%. Can you overlay the idea of left and right brain? I'm going to make an assumption that if you are able to relax and get to the 87%, you're able to use more of your right brain. Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So think about when you were a child, you got a Christmas present. It came in a giant box, and it took you a while to unwrap the box, get the paper off, get the ribbon off. You took the toy out of this huge box. And what did you spend the rest of the day playing with?
The box.
Yeah. Why?
Because you can use your imagination more.
Because it could be anything you wanted it to be. And when was the last time you saw the castle or the fort? When did you stop seeing the castle? How old were you?
When
you could only see a box.
Well, I'm not a good example.
Well, okay, so usually...
my imagination just runs away from me. But I think that... first grade, first and second grade is when people have to...
grade. Why?
Yeah, yeah.
So what happens at the age of 6? We go to school. And the teacher tells us it's just a box. And so that imagination starts to get squashed. Now, children are also very curious. What questions does a child ask? Why? And they keep going, right? And then we go to school and we get a job and we're told there's only one right answer. So we stop asking for the second why and the third why. But guess what? If you pause your brain for just a moment and act like a child, not childish, but childlike, and the insight for innovation comes on the fourth or fifth why. If you ask somebody, why do you go to Disney parks? They'll tell you I'll go for the rides. Well, that tells me to spend millions of dollars on capital new investment. But if you pause for a second and ask that second why, well, why do you go for the rides? Oh, well, I like Small World. Well, tell me why you like Small World. Well, I like Small World because I remember going with my mum. Well, why is that important to you? I take my daughter now. What that person has told you on the fourth or fifth why is what's really important to them. It's not about new capital investment. It's about memory and nostalgia. And so that's a communication campaign. But if you stop on the first why, as we do as adults, because we're frightened of searching for the second right answer, we don't get the deepest insight. So you're born very creative. You used to play with a box. You're born very curious. Now, let me ask you another question. Have you ever stared at the back of the head of somebody who you thought was quite good looking, a total stranger, and they immediately turned around and stared at you and you had to look away really quickly?
I didn't get the last part. Say it again.
Don't worry, but you, well, so of course you have. We all have. But here's the thing. So how did they know you were looking at them? Intuition. You have 100 billion neurons in your first brain, the one in your skull. You have 100 million neurons in your gut. Now think about the decisions you make every day, the place you choose to go to eat, the outfit you choose to wear today, the place you choose to go on holiday, the products and services you choose to consume. Did you make that with your first brain, your rational brain, or did you go with your gut? Most consumers make their decisions with their gut. Your
right.
Intuition is a much more powerful tool than people give it credit for. So you're born curious, you're born creative, you're born with intuition, and we all have amazing imagination. So last week, you had that weird dream about either Beyonce or David Beckham and a spaceship that you don't want to talk about. But we've all had the dream, right? And we can laugh. But here's the thing. So we all have an amazing imagination. Here's why the right-hand side of the brain is going to dominate the next decade. You're all born curious. You're all born with intuition. You're all born creative. And you're all born with an amazing imagination. Those are the four skill sets that I believe will be the most employable in the next decade for one reason and one reason only. You can't program them into artificial intelligence.
Right.
Will we be able to in the future? Maybe, but not in the next decade. And so actually the four skill sets that we were born with will actually become the most employable in the next decade because they can't be replicated. And so it's time to actually, and part of what I do is go around reminding people that they were curious, they have an imagination, they are creative, and they have intuition, and teaching them how to use those skill sets, those traits that we all have, by giving them a set of innovation tools to help them think differently.
So this is the core of what I wanted to talk with you about, because as you know, just to remind people, this year we're focusing on AI and society. Of course, that means many things, but you know, we started out the year with AI and ethics, and we've been talking about the future of work and how robots are going to be working alongside of us. And I know you had an experience at a recent conference that you had that you spoke at that you had to follow a robot. Sophia, was it? You had to follow Sophia.
So they say that Sophia will be thousands of times more intelligent than the human race in less than a decade. So how will you compete for that? Well, you'll compete. Well, there are two things. I'm not scared of artificial intelligence for two reasons. One is, of the four things I just talked about, well, there won't be programmed. But here's the other one. We will become artificial intelligence. So think about it, right? I have a metal neck. It's completely titanium. I broke it 10 years ago. Completely titanium. Some people have cataract surgeries. Some people have ear implants. Some people have hip replacements. Some people use prosthetic limbs. Do we think the iPhone didn't exist 11 or 12 years ago? Do you think you'll still be carrying it 15 years from today? Not a chance. It'll be that technology will be embedded into you somewhere. So here's what will happen. As we seek everlasting life, as we seek better health, as we seek a better older age, we'll become like a secondhand car. We're going to take on part. By the way, a heart is a pump. That can be replaced. Hearts will be replaced. I mean, they're already printing hearts in 3D in Hyderabad, India today just for surgeons to model and test on. They don't actually put them into humans. But how long is that for? We have pacemakers. And so think about the evolution of artificial intelligence and humans. We will bring to the table intuition, curiosity, imagination, and creativity. They will bring tech, and we will become a superhuman race, not in my lifetime, but certainly in my children's lifetime. So it's not them and us. It's us. We will become superhumans.
I agree with that. I think that what people are, from what I've been hearing and listening on the ground here, I think people are afraid of automation because they think that it's going to take their jobs, which I don't do it, but this is going to take some of the parts of their jobs.
No. That, finance, strategy, planning, critical thinking.
Calendaring. I want someone to do my calendaring.
It's all going to get stripped away. They say that artificial intelligence will remove 1/10 of the population of the United States of America from the workforce in less than 10 years. Yes, of course it will. There's no question about that. So it's a question of dialing up those skills, creative problem-solving skills. Here's the other failure, is education. We're still teaching our children the same subjects I got taught. Well, guess what? Now we have to teach our children the jobs that don't exist yet. Well, how the hell do you do that? Creative problem-solving. And so it's about giving people the tools, and I'll give you an example of a couple of the tools. So one tool was used by Walt Disney to create Disneyland. He was showing Fantasia in the movies, and he wanted it to rain during Drip 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 until they put the showers. He wanted heat pumped in during Night on a Bear Mountain. And the theater owner said, no, Walt, too expensive, we're not doing it. So he used this tool called What If. You list all the rules of your challenge, so Walt did. He listed, you know, it's dark to go to the movies, you have to sit down, you have to go to set time, you have to watch the previews. I, Walt, can't control the environment. So he took that rule and said, what if I could? Well, that's not provocative enough. The more provocative question you ask, the further out of your river of thinking you get. So he said, well, wait a minute. What if I take my movies out of the theater? Well, that was a provocative question, 1940, an absurd suggestion. Well, he said, okay, so imagine a world where I can make that work. Well, they couldn't be two-dimensional anymore. Well, what if I made them three-dimensional? Well, if I made them three-dimensional, I'd need to have people play the characters. Well, I have people play the characters. Cinderella, well, she'd have to kind of live in a land surrounded by castles and princes. But Davy Crockett, well, he'd probably have to be in a land full of cactuses. So I'd have to put them in different lands. Oh, I know, I call it Disneyland. The biggest, greatest suggestion of the 20th century. Fast forward to 2005, we all got fed up with going to Blockbuster Video and paying late fees. So the founder of Netflix used the same tool. He listed the rules of going to Blockbuster. You had to be kind and rewind. You had to have a membership card. You had to pay late fees. You had to drive there. You had to go during opening hours. You had to, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And he chose one. He said you had to drive there. And he said, what if there was no physical store? Well, that was an absurd suggestion in 2005. Well, guess what? Imagine a world where I can make that work. Well, YouTube already existed. It existed for a decade. It only streams amateur content. So he said, what if I do a deal with the movie studios to stream professional content? Nobody would have to be kind of rewind. Nobody would have to drive to a physical store. Nobody would need a membership card. Everybody gets the one they want on opening day weekend, and nobody pays late fees. I'll cut it off for 24 hours. Oh, I know, I'll call it Netflix. He took the idea to Blockbuster Video 5 times. They turned him down 5 times. He took them out of business in 5 years. We all have rules. We all have rules at work, and we all have people going, that's the way we do it here. Yeah, guys, goodbye. If you continue to work like that. By the way, so here's the next, the most provocative things of the next decade will be the most exciting and terrifying of our lives. Because
right.
It's just, from 1920, when Wall Street was born, to 1910, we build it, they will come. Coke made soft drinks, Ford made motor cars, Disney made theme parks, and people came. And it worked that way. We build it, they will come. And now what you're finding is companies that are finding very quickly they need to change from a product-centric culture to a consumer-centric one.
Right.
If you ask them if they're consumer-centric, they'll put their hands up. But if you ask them if they've ever spent a day in the living room with one of their consumers, nobody can. Therefore, they're not consumer-centric. Then you've got artificial intelligence, and we talked about that. But here's the third one that people aren't watching as much as they should, Generation Z, the Generation Z, as you would call it, a generation who care more about purpose than profit. So much so that not only will they not buy your products and services if they don't believe in what you stand for, they don't want to work for you either. And so I was asked recently to go and give a talk to the world's leading tool company. They make more tools than anybody else. We buy them in our DIY stores. And I thought, how could I learn more about their consumer? So I went down to Home Depot and Lowe's, hung out in the aisle like some creepy guy speaking their consumers. And I went back to talk to them and I said, listen, this generation, they don't even know who you are. They're not talking about your brand. They're not even talking about your products, the hammer, the chisel, or the saw at the point of rest. They don't even give a damn about the price. What they're talking about is what's important to them, and they're very animated about, we're going to build our dream bathroom, our dream kitchen, our dream living room, our dream house. I said, your purpose, if you choose to create one, is you could be the brand who helps people build their dreams. Now, think about that as a tool company, and you can see the finance guys go, well, how's that going to drive quarterly results? Because they're maniacally focused on quarterly results. Anybody who focuses more on quarterly results than purpose in the next decade will be gone, and rightly so, because they're greedy. But here's why, and here's the importance of this. If you're the brand who can help people build their dreams, what other lines of business could this brand get into? They could get out of the tool industry altogether. No. Why? Because they're maniacally focused on their quarterly results. Their definition of innovation isn't, it's iteration. They can expand into Mexico and India because they have a growing middle class, and we'll sell our tools to them. No, you won't. India will bypass tools just as they bypass computers. They don't use computers. They never use them. They bypassed them and went straight to mobile phones. So guess what? We're printing houses in Houston, Texas today on a 3D printer. They're printing hearts in India, as I mentioned earlier on, for surgeons to practice on a 3D printer. Amazon spent over $4.7 billion on shipping last year. Now, it's in Amazon's interest for you to have a 3D printer. Think of the money they'll save on production, storage, and shipping. 10 years from now, 15 years from now, I estimate that a minimum of 30% of what you buy on Amazon today, you'll print at home. Books, you'll print them at home. Small tables, you'll print them at home. Coffee table, you might have to go to your local printers because your printer's not big enough. If you can print anything you want on demand 10 to 15 years from today, what will you be building or using a hammer, a chisel, or a saw for? Oh, no, that's right. They'll be in a museum. But because they're focused on their quarterly results, because they're focused on their quarterly results and not their purpose,
right.
They can't see
right.
it coming. They can't,
no,
they,
no,
they
I mean,
can't see
a lot
it coming,
of, yeah, they're not,
and they're
they're
gone.
Not, yeah. So let me step back a second because I want to get people to be able to call in here. So I want to review. So we talked about a couple of tools, this idea of when the penny drops to help you relax, to get out of your left brain mind, if you will, your conscious mind. We want to get to the subconscious and the intuition. Then we've also talked about the what if. So that's certainly the, mm-hmm. the quintessential design thinking question. We want to be able to think beyond what's in front of us. So the what if question is awesome. Just give us one more tool, and then I want to get
yeah.
the folks
okay.
to ask some questions.
Okay, so everybody listening in, I'm going to give you 7 seconds to draw an object. So get your pens. I'm going to name an object. I'll give you a minute while you get your pen and your paper. I'm going to name an object, and I'm going to ask you to draw it, but you're only going to get 7 seconds to draw it. So if you get your pen and your paper. All right. I'm going to name an object, you're going to draw it, I'll count 7 seconds down, you'll put your pen down when you finish drawing the object. I would like you to draw a house. 7, 6, 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Pen's down. Now, I have a few questions for you. Why did you draw the door at the front in the middle on the ground floor? Why did you draw 2 windows, and why are you so insecure that you still put bars over them? And what shape is the roof? We still put bars over them. What shape is the roof? You drew a triangle. Why? Because our river of thinking, our expertise and our experience tells us that's what a house should look like. The biggest single barrier to innovation is you and me and our experience. The more experience, the more expertise you get, the more in your river of thinking you go. You just went straight into your river of thinking what a house should look like. So here's another tool you can use. Bring a naive expert into the room. A naive expert is somebody who doesn't work for you and doesn't work in your industry. Their goal is not to solve the challenge for you. That is an unrealistic expectation. They will ask the silly question that you're too embarrassed to ask in front of your peers. They will throw out the audacious idea that you're too conservative to throw out, governed by politics and constraints. That whatever they say will get you out of your river of thinking and thinking differently. I invited 12 Imagineers to help me design the retail, dining, and entertainment complex for Hong Kong Disneyland. I asked them all to draw a house. I knew what I was going to get, what you've just drawn in front of you. So I also invited in as my naive expert, the Chinese chef, because she was female, not male, because she was 30, not 50, because she was Chinese, not American, and because she was a chef, not an architect. While everybody drew what I knew they would draw, she didn't. She drew dim sum architecture, which if you've never seen it before, is a round bamboo dish that your dim sum comes in with a pork ball, a shrimp ball, and a little chimney and a Chinese lady waving out the window. And when we all showed our picture, or when we all showed our pictures, we all laughed because we realized we stayed in our river of thinking of what a house should look like. She gave us permission to get out of our river of thinking and think differently and consider audacious architecture. If any company in the world could consider audacious architecture, it'd be the Walt Disney Company. Mm-hmm. On the way out the door, somebody slapped a post-it note over her picture that said, distinctly Disney, authentically Chinese. Well, guess what? 7 years later, the strategic brand position for the Shanghai Disney Resort, distinctly Disney, authentically Chinese. If somebody looks different to you, they think different to you. And if they mm-hmm. think different to you, they will help you think differently. Diversity is innovation. And I would encourage you to bring a naive expert into every session you run to challenge your thinking and get you out of your river of thinking and thinking.
That's awesome. I want you to know that I did draw clouds in my house picture.
Well, I probably gave you too much time then.
Okay. So I want to stop a second because this has been great. You've been giving us a lot of great ideas, and I want to allow folks to ask questions or make some comments. Who has a question or comment for Duncan or a problem they want to solve?
What are the three things you could do tomorrow to make your office environment more creative?
What's your name?
My name is Rob Hankins. I'm calling from Canton, Ohio.
Okay, hi, Rob.
Hello, Rob.
Here's what,
that's fine. So the first thing I would do is, if you're the most senior person with the biggest office, walk out of your office tonight, lock the door, and don't go back, and I'll tell you for why. So I was the first executive of the Walt Disney Company to give up my executive office. Because you have 50 people or 60 people, 20 people that work for you that walk past your door every single day that you don't talk to and you don't converse with. But actually, if you go sit in the hall and take your laptop with you, you're going to meet people that you might have taken them 5 or 10 years to meet you before. And your younger people know far more about what Generation Z wants. They know far more about social influencers, far more about social tools that you probably don't, but you've never asked them, right? And so that would be one. Give up your offices. And here's why. Steve Jobs, when he left Apple the first time and before he went back to Apple, he came to Pixar. And Steve helped us design the entire campus for Pixar. But he designed it around something called unplanned collaboration. Unplanned collaboration is designing a campus specifically designed to bring two people together to have a conversation they're not supposed to have to spark a new idea. That's one idea. Here's the second idea. We both know that your calendar next Tuesday is already full. Right? It looks like the barcode on a packet of cereal. And you hear yourself say, I don't have time to think. The number one barrier to innovation. So one of the most innovative companies in the world is Google. So what's the secret sauce that Google has that nobody else has? Guess what? They have a company policy. It's called time to think. It's called 20% time. Now, I'm not suggesting you could give your employees a day a week just to think. However, what if you took the first Friday of every month and had a brown bag breakfast in your office? From 9 till 10 a.m., everybody brings their own breakfast for an hour, and you ask them to just come and talk about something they've seen that's not in your industry in the last 30 days that they thought was innovative or creative. No PowerPoint presentations, they've got enough work to do. No, why is it good for our business? Just come in and show us it. And you'll be amazed at the amount of ideas you can tie back to that breakfast. And whilst you're on it, the subject of the first Friday of every month, why not try? Just try it. For 3 months. If it doesn't work, you can tweet me back and say, Duncan, you're full of shit. It's fine. I can take it. What if you took the whole day, no presentations, no meetings, no emails, 1 day a month? Try it. You'll be amazed at the difference it makes to your culture and the ideas. So that's another idea. So one is about abandoning your offices. Get people to sit by projects, not by authority and by hierarchy. Get them, if they're working on Project X, they go. So another idea is go buy farmhouse tables. And have people sit around them and have two rules of thumb. If you have 5 years experience or more with my company, please sit next to somebody who doesn't. And if you sat at that desk in the morning, don't sit there in the afternoon. And you'll be amazed at what the difference the culture. Music. I can control the energy in any ideation session I run with music. You walk into an office with no music, it's silent. You walk into an office with music and there's just a different energy level. So that's another one. Let's think about some other things you could do.
I want to make sure that those are four great ideas. I want to make sure that other people have a chance to talk. Rob, does that satisfy you? You have a follow-up?
That was great. I'm going to try that tomorrow. Thank you.
Okay. So, Duncan, I want to talk a little about this time to think, because there's a lot of brainstorming that goes on in organizations, in groups, and, I mean, when people think of brainstorming, they think of the group brainstorming. And I'm going to just talk about my bias, and then you can tell me what you think of it. My belief is that there needs to be both. There needs to be individual and group brainstorming. And, in fact, even if you're in the room doing design thinking as a group, you still have to give people time to ideate individually to themselves. So talk with me about your opinion about that and combinations of that and how you do it yourself with people.
So hands up, who's ever been to a brainstorm where nothing ever happened? You know, to the nearest, what, 10,000? Hands up, who's fed up of going to the next brainstorm, already knowing that nothing's going to happen? Yeah, everybody. So we're all fed up of it. We've all been doing it wrong. We've all been doing it the wrong way for the last 20 years. Somebody stands at the front of the flip chart. Somebody says, I'm looking for new ideas for our ice cream product. People throw stuff out. And then if you actually go back and ask, okay, who threw an idea out, what you'll find is less than 10% of the room participated. Why? Because you have two types of employees in your employment. You have introverts and extroverts. Extroverts are people who talk before they think. I'm guilty as charged. I like to say I talk as I think, but I know that's a lie. Then you have the introverts who think first. Well, who do you think has the best ideas? Well, the truth is they both do. But if you've only heard from 10% of your organization, why the hell are you hiring the other 90%? What a waste of time. And yet they've got genius ideas. So what I'll do is I'll break the team into a group of four, and I can't do it over a webcast, but I actually get them. I can show people, I'm not quite sure how to do it over a webcast, but how to develop a fully baked, ready-to-go-to-market idea with the product name, the price point, the texture, the flavor, the packaging, the color, where we're going to sell it, the promotional launch in less than 5 minutes, just by actually putting people into a group of four. And the other tool I would give you is ask people to use, and again, remind them they are not green-lighting this idea for execution, so the reduction is stop panicking. And just remind them that they're greenhousing the idea today. And what you do is you start every response with the words yes and you'll be amazed what happens in your culture. So yes and does three things. It makes the idea bigger, not smaller. It keeps you focused on the same idea, because if you say yes and, it forces your brain to work on the same idea. But here's the most powerful part of yes and just try it with a couple of people. Try running an exercise and getting people to say no because. And you'll find the idea, no, because legal won't go for that. No, because it's not a strategic brand fit. No, because not that's the way we don't do it here. No, because we tried that last year. And you'll find yourself go very reductionist. But if you say yes and, by the time you finish, if you ask the guy, give them the same brief and watch the dynamics of the room. The first time around, your idea will get very small. The second time around, you'll come up with a huge idea that you've probably gone over budget on. But you know what? You can always take a big idea and value engineer it down. You can't take a small crap idea and make it a big one. But here's the biggest, most powerful point. When you ask people at the end of the yes and exercise, whose idea was it? They will pause, they will smile, and they'll say the following word, ours. Mm-hmm. Do not underestimate the power of the word yes and. They come from the improv industry to transfer the power of my idea to our idea. When you're trying to sell something to a client, and you're trying to sell something to your boss, simply by using yes and, you can transfer that power of my idea to our idea. The other thing is, when you're in an ideation session or a presentation, if I were to ask anybody on, actually I'll ask you, how many days are there in September?
30.
How do you know?
How do I know there's 30 days in September?
Yes. Don't think about it. Just tell me how you knew.
Because I know that October has 31, and so that it's all, you know, every other, except for July and August.
Think harder. How did you learn that 30 days have September?
I don't know. I have no idea. It was probably in school.
Well,
I guess.
Okay. So the people listening, they're going to say one of three things. A third of them are going to remember the rhyme, 30 days had September, blah, 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 and November, all the rest, blah, 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 blah. They are telling you.
I don't know that.
They're
I don't
telling
know that,
you.
Go ahead.
Well, that, so whoever's laughing remembers it that way, and that person has just told me that they learned that at the age of 6, but instantly when I asked the question how many days there were in September, they instantly remembered it that way. That person just told me they're an auditory learner. They learn by listening. The person who put their knuckles up into two fists and started counting on their knuckles, which just told me they're a kinesthetic learner. They learn by doing, because they learned that 20, 30, 40 years ago, but they instantly remembered it that way. The people who close their eyes and just see a picture of the calendar, they just told me they're a visual learner. Here's the thing. When you're in an ideation session, when you're a presentation, your preferred learning style doesn't matter. Two-thirds of your audience don't share it. And unless you engage them in auditory cues, kinesthetic cues, and visual cues, you've lost your audience. The other thing is, be careful of your choice of words. If you tell somebody we're scheduling a presentation for next Tuesday, you've just asked them to think reductively straight away. They haven't even gotten the room yet. For those of you who used to watch American Idol, you know that we had Randy, Paula, and Simon. And Randy, Paula, and Simon sat behind what? This is not a trick question. They sat behind a table. And so what were Randy Paul and Simon? They were judges. The moment you put somebody on the other side of a physical object to you, they will think reductively, not expansively. And if you've got a presentation, A, don't call it a presentation. B, don't stand at the front of the room and do a digital presentation and bore the living daylights out of everybody who's sat through 5,000 digital presentations already this year. Print your presentation out. Doesn't matter if it's keynotes or PowerPoint. Stick it round the wall of, let's say you're in the boardroom. Ignore the table. Invite your client to come for a walk with you. Start at the beginning with the objectives, the success criteria, the consumer insights, the hypotheses, the initial ideas. Finish with your final recommendation, which you should cover because you know they'll read ahead. But here's what happened. The moment you brought them away from behind the table and went for a walk with them, a presentation turns into a conversation. And instead of thinking reductively and shooting your ideas down, they will think expansively and they will build on your work as you go. And instead of choosing to say, what do you think, which is inviting them to think reductively, you simply say, can you help me build on this idea? Can you help me think about this idea a different way? And simply by doing that, they will think expansive.
So let's talk about divergent and convergent thinking. Because you're basically talking about expansive thinking, and I call it divergent thinking. Tell us a little bit about how you use that in your design thinking workshops and talks and such.
Well, first you start with empathy, which is finding out what's important to the consumer, and actually going and spending time with the consumer would be a tip I would give you. Secondly is I use signaling. I'm very clear about the signaling. Guys, we're an expansion session today, so we're going to think expansive. And so if somebody's behaving like a reductive, I get them to stand up like an alcoholic and own it and say, hey, I'm a reductive. And everybody cheers for them, and they sit back down, and they'll be expansive for the rest of the day. And you must clearly signal what behaviors you want from people. The more clear, so plussing, Pixar has a plussing meeting. Well, what do you think they do in a plussing meeting?
Plussing, you said? Plus?
Plussing. What do you think they do in a plussing meeting at Pixar?
Tell us.
They add on. Well, so... But you know, it's a very clear signal of the behavior that's required in the meeting. So Hong Kong Shanghai Bank, and everybody listening somewhere in 5 miles of you is an art school. The professor needs projects for their students. The students need a portfolio. So you could take that boring meeting room that you're fed up of going into with the 1980s image of the team, the canoe with the quote on it, collecting 6 inches of dust. You could remove the table. You could get the art school to come in and paint a greenhouse around the walls, put a green carpet down, call it the greenhouse, and then everybody knows what behavior is. It's a very clear signal of what behavior is required when you're in this particular room. We're inviting people to think expansionist and use expansionist or divergent thinking. Now, at some point in the process, you have to move to reductive thinking. One of the challenges is this. Ideas are the most subjective thing on the planet. You like pink, I like blue, our boss likes green. Guess what? We're doing the green idea. Well, that might not be the best one for the consumer and for the business. So there are actually a couple of tools that help take all the subjectivity out of the idea business and allow you to actually settle on the ideas that the team are most passionate about. Because you want to find out that first. Because if the team aren't passionate about the idea, I promise you it gets deleted, stuck, or killed as it moves through to execution. And you're not there anymore. So that's voting with your heart. Then there's another tool I use called Wheel of Wonder that votes with your head, that very quickly takes all the subjectivity off the table and enables you to reach and find out of all the ideas you've had. So Passionometer is voting with your heart. I can get down to from 54 ideas to about 14 in about 3 minutes. And then I use this other tool to actually take those 14 ideas and evaluate them against the agreed-to success. Is it a strategic brand fit? Is it embedded in consumer choice? And then whatever else you want the criteria to be, and very quickly you will sort to which is the strongest idea, not which idea the boss thinks is the best. And it's a genius tool. One of the things I also do is I'll get with my clients and I'll say, hey, we have 54 ideas. I put them in the appendix. They don't want to see them. But I want them to see the level of work that's been done. I'll say, here's how we got from the 54 down to the 14. And then I'll show them this other tool, and I'll actually evaluate the final three ideas with them using this tool. And they will sort to which idea is best for the consumer and best for the business, and they just bought into it.
So this idea of themes, I use that as well when I conduct workshops. And what is the method by which you use to get from the 54 to the 14? You said there's a tool you use. Could you just...
Well, there's two. There's Passionometer, which is allowing people to vote anonymously. I can't describe it over a webcast. Right. And then there's Wheel of Wonder, which if people want to contact me, I can take them through it on over a phone.
Say it again.
It,
but, it got garbled. What was the last one again?
Well, there's Passionometer and Wheel of Wonder. Passionometer is about evaluating the ideas from the team's passion, which will very, but do it done anonymously. So you, because normally we all line up behind the boss, and if the boss ticks number 17, we all tick number 17. Well, but the team might not be passionate about idea number 17, so you know it's not going to happen anyway. So the first one is about voting with your head, heart. The second one is a tool which very quickly allows you to evaluate the top 14 ideas with your head. Very quickly enables you to get down to which is actually the one that's going to be more embedded in consumer truth and which one, therefore, is most likely to drive business results.
Got it. Okay.
Kind of hard to describe over a webcast, but happy to take people through it on the phone.
Is it on your website?
No, it's not.
Okay. This has been awesome. I mean, there's a lot of wonderful ideas. I think that, you know, looking at the big picture of design thinking is important, and then also these penny drops that's getting people in their bodies, I think is awesome.
The other tip I would offer is this. Let me ask you some questions. Have you ever been to your favorite restaurant? You go two or three times a year with your loved one. It's your favorite restaurant. You read the whole menu. You read the appetizers, the main courses, the desserts. You listen to the specials. And what do you do next?
Order the same thing you already ordered.
Of course you do. You order the same thing you order every time. So do you sleep on the same side of the bed every night? Yes, of course you do. Even when you're in a hotel room by yourself? Yes, of course you do. Have you ever commuted home and looked at your front door, your garage door, and there's that split second where you think, how the hell did I get here? Yes. What happened on the way home? Your brain shut down, physically shut down. It knows where the CVS is. It knows where the traffic light is. No fresh stimulus in, no new ideas out. If you commute the same way to the office every single day, once a month, one way, this is not a huge commitment, commute a different way. If you listen to a different radio, if you listen to the same radio station every day, once a month, listen to a different radio station. Try to get new stimulus into your lives, because without new stimulus in, you'll have no new fresh ideas. And again, the other thing is by looking outside your industry, there's a tool called Where Else? Where in the world has somebody already solved the challenge I've been tasked with? And borrowing back the underlying principle. So Speedo in 1996 were given the task, make our swimmers go faster through water. So they asked the question, who'd already solved the challenge of moving quickly through water? Dolphins, sharks, otters, torpedoes, speedboats. They chose a shark. They did some biomimicry on its skin, and they found it had, on a bullnose shark, has hundreds of thousands of little sharp pimples on its skin, under which it can contain a microscopic air pocket that it could expand as it chooses to expand its surface friction against the water, slow down and turn, such as the swimmer hitting the wall, or it could force all of those air pockets out, reducing its surface friction and moving like a bullet. Speedo borrowed the underlying principle back, Burke created those one-piece suits that went from neck to calf that you saw them all wear to the Sydney Olympic Games, broke 14 world records, and the suit was banned from the future of the sport for being too much of a competitive and innovative advantage. But simply by looking outside their industry and asking who else had already solved the chat. So, for example, Listerine. We used to buy Listerine in big bottles, small bottles, purple, pink, green, but it was always in the bottom corner of CVS. So they asked themselves, where in the world has somebody already solved the challenge of discrete consumption? That's what our consumers are looking for. They can't carry these bottles around with them and take a swig of Listerine just before they're about to chat somebody up in a bar. So they asked, where in the world has somebody already solved the challenge of discrete consumption? And they found a Japanese pharmaceutical company that made a meltable strip female contraceptive. So they basically borrowed back the idea, created the Listerine pocket back, broke their annual revenue goals in less than 28 days. And you know when something's innovative, because people start to copy you. Well, guess what? You can buy children's medicine in the United States of America today on meltable strips, because children don't like saying it. So simply by looking out, so putting the challenge in the middle of the piece of paper, step one, put the challenge in the middle of the piece of paper. How might we get more 21 to 24-year-olds to come more often and spend more money? Step two, list who's really good at it. Amazon, Disney, iTunes, Fortnite, and then you say, okay, take one of those, Fortnite. What does Fortnite do? Well, Fortnite allows you to choose your own avatar, allows you to choose your own adventure, gives you competition, gives you social status. And then you say, ooh, avatar, how might we create a cosplay event that attracts people to our event and they can come dress in their favorite costume? Or let's say it was own adventure. Ooh, what if we created an escape room in our lobby, theme to the movie we're about to show, and whoever solves the challenge the quickest gets the best things in the house. social status? How might we, and all these different ideas, just from looking outside, the biggest
right.
innovations in the industry comes from looking outside of your industry, not inside it.
Right. I'm totally with you on that. Take a lot of teams to the museum to think differently. It's great. So thank you so much, Duncan. This is a lot of food for thought, a lot of ideas. Wouldn't expect anything different from you, given your background. So appreciate this, the potpourri of ideas. I wanted to remind people where they can find you, DuncanWardle.com. That's W-A-R-D-L-E. And Twitter is at Duncan J. Wardle. That's how we found you. So want to put a plug
and
in
Duncan,
for that.
Duncan is not spelled the way Starbucks spell it. It is not D-U-N-K-I-N. That is a donut.
It's D-U-N-C-A-N, in case everybody wants to know. Thanks again. I very much appreciate all your ideas. And next Wise Talk is Nikita Lukianets. It's hard to pronounce that. Founder and CTO of Pocket Confident AI. That's on June 21st at 11 a.m. Pacific Time. Want to make sure that everybody gets that information and sends it out to your colleagues. And just a reminder, what we talked about today, creativity is, I don't want to say it's the antidote, I think that's too strong of a word, but it's definitely going to help us be alongside the robots. Robots can only do so many things, and they don't have judgment yet. So we have to be the people that do the judging. So thanks again, Duncan. I really appreciate it. Let's talk offline because I'd like to meet you when you're here. So next week.
Okay. Thank you all
Take
very
care.
Much.
All right.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Take care. Bye.